You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
So excited for y'all to join us for another episode.
Are you joining us from your old Kentucky home?
That's right. I'm going to be saying y'all a lot on this episode.
Howdy, partners.
Hey there.
We're fixing to discuss Mad Men.
Hey, we're going to talk about advertisements. I'm very excited. This is a fun episode to talk about. Before we get started on doing that, of course, give us 5 stars and a review on all of the, Apple Podcast apps that exist, the Spotify's, the Overcast, the what have yous, and join the Patreon.
We'll kill you.
Yeah. Well, no. Too far. Yeah. You don't need to threaten the audience, but if you do, we will be grateful, and if you don't, we will find you. See, it's an implied threat,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to gently. Not a single jury in the land would find me guilty of actual threatenings, whereas you are going straight to jail. Please, patreon.com/frogcast. We want you to listen to our bonus episode every week, or as Gene put it,
I want my $5.
That's right. For $5 a month, you get a bonus episode that's us talking about not Mad Men. It's us talking about basically everything else that exists.
Everything besides Mad Men. We're covering all of our bases.
That's right.
Sometimes we talk about Mad Men. Sometimes we talk about the other stuff that's not Mad Men.
Yes, exactly. Which is most things. Mm. So please go to patreon.com/frogcast and join now. Okay. Today, Vince, we're talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 3, My Old Kentucky Home. And with us is a wonderful guest, a returning champion to the Pod Yourself Extended Universe, comedian, writer, whose debut album is out now.
Novel. I'm screaming.
What's a book?
Whose debut writing novel is out now from Hachette. And it is called First Time, Long Time. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, please welcome Amy Silverberg. What's up?
I'm screaming novel.
Yeah, it's not an album. Any fucking idiot can do an album.
This is like when I teach short stories. My college students call them articles. I'm like, what is wrong with you guys? It's not an article.
You're lucky that they don't call it tabs. It'd be like, oh yeah, I read that tab, and it's like that is a news item from the New York Times.
Yeah,
exactly. You are a wonderful comedian, a wonderful writer. You write things. You teach people. You teach the youth how to write.
I try.
It's hard, isn't it?
Oh yeah, Vince also does this.
I took a break actually from teaching college. I was teaching adults. At like UCLA Extension, places like that. And I I'm returning to making my triumphant return to college campuses.
Oh, I love it. I mean, listen, there's nothing more wondrous than a college campus. They've got food. They've got wild
acapella groups.
Yes.
Drug dealers, kids on scholarships, things of this nature.
I was going to say wild sex parties, but I don't know if they actually have those, but in my mind they did. Since you're someone who writes, I imagine that you enjoy all sorts of writing from short stories to novels. What about ad copy? Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite advertisement?
I do. You know, I like animals doing people things.
I love that.
And you see a lot of ads making use of that trope.
Yes. Is there anyone recently that you enjoy or from your childhood that you really like?
I got to tie it with two. I, of course, like the Geico Gecko.
Oh, he's great.
You know, I like a little British gecko.
Yeah.
I also like the Bush's Baked Bean Golden Retriever.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know this guy.
He's trying to get the secret bean recipe, and Butch ain't talking. And then he talks, and he's like, "Oh no, I'm gonna have to kill my dog."
he knows too much.
Vince
nailed it. Yeah. Vince nailed it. That's it. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the Bush's Baked Bean Golden Retriever. That's interesting.
That beautiful bean footage. Never.
No, I don't. For some reason, maybe this is just a different time, you know?
Philistine.
I suppose I am. But, I mean, I do, of course, love the Geico Gecko. He's always helping people out.
I can't compliment anything that Geico does because they released, like, an entire web series that was, like, about their writers talking about coming up with the ads.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, you guys came up with the banjo guys that like sing Old MacDonald, which is like one of the worst commercials that I've ever seen. Like there's so many Geico ads that like this should have never crossed the filter between your brain and your mouth, let alone be greenlit into a commercial.
It's also like you have the gecko. Stick with the gecko.
Yeah, the gecko. He's a British gecko.
I like that he like is famous, but he doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, he seems bewildered at his own fame.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of like that.
There is also something inherently wrong about the idea of celebrating ad men in any capacity.
Totally. And also it's celebrating insurance companies.
Yes.
I want to reiterate that. Beans, you can celebrate beans a little bit.
Beans
easier.
Are great. I understand that.
Focus on the product. That's great.
Right.
But listen, as Don Draper says, that's what the money's for.
Yes.
You don't get celebrated as a creative genius because you made an insurance commercial. Sorry.
Yes, exactly. And it's unfair to so many people who have, you know, struggled it out in open mics for their entire careers and never once decided to quit their dream and go into advertising, you know?
Now I'm realizing why I've gotten paid so little for this novel, because I'm a creative genius.
That's right. It's because you're too smart. You know, Picasso was never rich. I don't know.
Wrote all those words about insurance, boom, just stack that paper.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the money is for. But this is not a podcast about talking animals, unfortunately, no. This is a podcast about Mad Men, and we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Woke up the snow. Mad. Yourself. Man. Mom always said you'd be there. Chosen. Mad Men. Drunk. Advertising podcast. All right, everybody. Once again, talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 3, My Old Kentucky Home. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
I sure can. Roger Sterling throws an expensive party with his new wife. Joan throws a dinner party. Peggy and Paul get stoned while working on an ad campaign. And Don's daughter, Sally, steals money from her grandpa.
Mm, that is right. That
Those are
is,
all things what that happened in yes, this episode.
But I feel like another thing happened on this episode that this episode is particularly known for.
That's right. This episode... It was the only Mad Men that we've watched for the show so far that started out with a disclaimer. I think it was like a good 10 to 20 seconds that disclaimer was on the screen. And, you know, since the people at AMC thought it was important enough to have a disclaimer before this episode, I thought that we should have a disclaimer before we start this podcast.
Yeah. Can I guess what it's about?
Hmm.
Is it about how stealing is wrong?
No, it's not.
Nope. Oh, wait. Is it about how it is racist to play the accordion and sing in French? It's a stereotype?
No, it is not about, surprisingly not about that.
Well, then I'm lost. What is it about? Read it.
I'll just have to read. Well, do you want me to read the original disclaimer? I wrote a disclaimer for this podcast, so I was going
to
read
I'd like to hear Vince's.
Yeah, I would.
This episode contains disturbing conversations relating to disturbing images related to race in America. Two of the host and guest discuss one of the characters on the TV show they discuss on the podcast being shown in blackface as part of an episode about an episode that shows how commonplace racism was in America in 1963 in 2025.
This is very convoluted. I love it.
In its reliance on authentic discussions of the historical authenticity of Mad Men, The hosts of Mad Yourself a Man are committed to discussing a show committed to exposing the injustices and inequities within our society that continue to this day, so we can examine even the most painful parts of our history of watching TV shows in order to reflect on who we are today and what shows we want to watch tomorrow. We are therefore discussing this episode, which airs in its entirety.
Wow. Wow, that is, I mean, it's good for people to know that, you know, it is really, listen, this is a podcast that requires, I would say, a modicum of media literacy.
You have to listen with an open mind, but also...
Then you picked the wrong guest. I'm media literate, baby.
Yeah, I take everything as real, and there is no such thing as character. Every character ever written is actually the secret dark heart of the writer. That's what I've always believed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what my therapist thinks about my novel.
I love it. Oh man, yeah. This is the first episode that we've had so far that had this kind of disclaimer. This was, I think, added way later upon subsequent airings of it. At the time when a lot of shows, it was 2020, like post George Floyd protests, where shows were either taking off episodes.
Y'all did blackface and we have receipts.
Yeah. And it was like incredibly like expansive. Like you would see it. There was like episodes of 30 Rock that were taken down.
Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
If the idea behind the original shows wasn't that it was like outrageous and a bad thing to do in the first
Right. But at the same time, it was definitely at a time where people were realizing that the reliance on like the joke very much relied on like, well, of course, we all agree racism's bad. And then in 2020, people were like, wait. Does everyone not agree? Yeah, do we agree?
I thought this episode
of Mad Men was advertising blackface.
Yes.
That was how I came to understand
this. This is why media literacy is very important.
It was an endorsement, not just a depiction.
Yeah, that's right. Every like, depiction is an endorsement. But yes, this is the famous blackface episode of Mad Men.
By the way, sorry, this week I got a reporter asked me for a comment for a story and he was like, how should I identify you, the host of Pod Yourself a Gun? And I was like, yeah, the host of Pod Yourself. How do we describe the name of the podcast that
we're trying to be unsuccessful? It is called Pod Yourself a Gun, a rewatch podcast.
Yes. God, why didn't I just say that? I should have known that.
Well, that is the name of it. And of course, this particular season is Mad Yourself a Man.
Pod Yourself a Gun, a rewatch podcast that is sometimes about The Wire or Mad Men.
That's right. Yep. Was yeah, that's those are all.
Wait, so you guys have done Sopranos. You've also done The Wire.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And now you're doing Mad Men.
And now we're doing Mad Men.
You know, I missed The Wire. So I guess I got to watch it.
It is. It's a great show. You got to see The Wire.
I know this is, and I'm not trying to make this podcast about The Wire.
I mean, we could just, you guys want to just talk about our favorite episode of The Wire? No, we can't. We have to talk about this episode. And we can't do it without first understanding what was going on in America at the time that this episode was set in.
That's right. We can't evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We got to add some of that context back in, which we do with a little segment that we like to call the news machine.
Ooh, I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent. That's news, isn't it?
That's right. We're going this episode aired August 30th, 2009, and therefore we're going all the way back to August 30th, 1963.
What a time.
Which was actually, believe it or not, the day of Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, the March on Washington.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. So this is, so the, ooh, that's a rough one.
the blackface episode.
I mean, to be fair, technically, the way we do this is that it's not the actual time on the show. It's the year of the show, and the date is the date that it aired in 2009, but we go back to 1963. It's just the massive, massive coincidence. But I remember that. I Have a Dream. Good-ass speech.
Yeah. I Have a Dream, he cried over and over again in his lisping. I didn't know. Wow. Does Martin Luther King have a lisp?
Not that I know. Where did you, what are you reading from?
This is from the Vancouver Sun. In his lisping, melodious voice. Don't wallow in the valley of despair, he exhorted the 200,000 people who formed a sea of faces in front of him and had to pause as a great cheer rose from their throats. Then King threw away the prepared text that had been distributed 2 days before the march and became the true leader of his people. I still have a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. One day this nation will rise up and live up to its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
He does not have a lisp. I very clearly remember self-evident, not sounding like self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident. This fog is the thickest pea soup.
So that was from the Vancouver Sun. There's a picture of the March on Washington from the Miami Herald. And this picture, it's not like the names of celebrities that you would necessarily expect to be together at the same time.
Tell me.
Left to right, actors Charlton Heston, Harry Belafonte, James Baldwin, and Marlon Brando.
Wow. That is, it is. Interesting. I mean, I guess Brando, this is pre-70s Brando when he's like going on late night shows and going like, I have a problem with the Jews or whatever.
Did he say that? That made me sneeze. Anti-Semitism makes me sneeze.
You said, a Jew. I remember he was yelling about he had the problem with the Jews in Hollywood, but I think technically he was just saying that because in Hollywood they were depicting Native Americans as being like less than human. So I think he was doing it wokely. So I don't know. Yeah. It all evens out, cancels each other out, I believe.
The reason for the March on Washington seems to be summed up with this next story. 6 months in jail for killing Negro.
Wow.
A young tobacco farmer convicted in the beating death of a Negro waitress has been given until September 15th to start a 6-month sentence so that he can harvest his crop. So not only was he only getting 6 months, they were like, well, you can harvest your tobacco and then.
Well, you got to get back to work.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this economy will collapse.
Judge D. Kennedy McLaughlin allowed the delay Wednesday in sentencing William Zansinger, 24, and fining him $625 on the manslaughter conviction. he could have received a 10-year term. Zantzinger was found guilty by a 3-judge court in the death of Mrs. Hattie Carroll, who died 8 hours after he beat her with a toy cane at a charity ball in Baltimore on February 9th.
Jesus Christ. And he got 6 months in jail?
Yeah. Testimony at the trial disclosed he and his wife arrived at the dance inebriated, and that after a few drinks, he hit one Negro waitress with the cane.
Crazy.
This is why I want to outlaw canes.
Yeah, 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 all of them. Candy, citizen, any canes that are out there. Wow, that is...
it gets way worse. I don't know if I want to read that.
Yeah, this sounds...
I wonder how much historical research the writers were doing every episode.
It does feel like a relatively authentic, only in that this is a show that I used to watch with my mom. And one of the reasons she enjoyed it so much was that it would bring back not just memories of like ads of the time, but types of guys from the time.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think there is,
I don't care about television so much, but the history is very nice.
Okay. First of all, my mom's the Irish
that's
one.
Not-
why you got to do that voice?
Oh, I thought I was just doing an Irish.
Oh, God. The air here is so dry. Fuck you, Vince. I know.
I watched it with my grandma, and she also liked it for that reason.
Yeah, it's just one of those shows where it was, you know, like I think at least relatively well researched in terms of the time, which includes I think the whole idea of the Derby Party, which they have in this episode, which is just a racist country club party where people are playing Dixieland jazz and doing blackface. So. I think it was consistent with the time.
Mm-hmm. Then the court was told he ordered a drink from Mrs. Carroll, mother of 11 children who had a history of heart trouble. When the woman said she would get it as quickly as she could, Zantzinger screamed, "I don't have to take that kind of stuff from a word.
Got it. Yeah.
He hit her with the cane and she crumpled to the floor.
Jesus fucking Christ. This is a dark one, Vince.
Sorry. I mean, it's context, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm not blaming you for history, but I'm
blaming
you for
letting
me know.
I have some lighter ones so we can transition out.
Okay, that'll be fun.
Rock Hudson's home rifled.
Rifled?
Like rifled through?
Yep. Police have accused a young mother accused of spending the night in actor Rock Hudson's house while he was out of town. Her 5-year-old daughter was with her, police said.
Oh, so...
Right, well, she just wanted to... sleep in Rock Hudson's bed? That seems okay.
It was a mother-daughter rifling.
Yeah.
Let her rifle. Let her cook.
I love the idea of like the charge of rifling where it's like, no, I didn't steal, but you're just kind of looking through stuff.
You're trundling.
You were reading my various papers.
You're perusing. There's rifling and perusery.
Yeah. You're going to jail for 5 to 10 for browsing.
Mrs. Dorothy Jean Straczynski, 32, of suburban Anaheim, was booked on suspicion of burglary after officers said they found some of her Hudson's possessions in her car. Hudson's maid...
Oh, she did take a few.
Yeah, you got to. Miss Leatrice Lowe called police after she said she saw
Leatrice.
Mrs. Straczynski... Uh-huh.
That's
quite a name.
That's not her name.
And her daughter, Deborah, 5, in Hudson's living room. Police quoted Mrs. Straczynski as saying a friend of Hudson's had told her and her daughter could spend Monday night in the house.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Detective says Mrs. Straczynski apparently entered the house by crawling under a gate and taking the house keys from Hudson's car, which was parked in the driveway.
He told me to do it. He said, like, yeah, it's come over anytime. Oh, you don't need a key. Just there's a hole under the gate. Just crawl.
Come through my crawl space.
He said, break the window. He said, you think I'm going to do that with my daughter if you didn't tell me to? Come on. Who do you think I am, Leatrice?
Finally, we have Sometimes I Sit and Wonder. That's a headline. Forest Hills, New York. Maureen Little Mo Connolly can still crease a sideline with a passing shot off either wing, and she looks as trim and sharp as 10 years ago, but she has no desire to return to tennis competition. Sometimes I sit and wonder how I would play Margaret Smith, the one-time court whiz from San Diego, California, said Wednesday. Then I shrug it off and forget it. Such thoughts can only frustrate you. Little Mo was undisputed queen of the courts in the early 1950s, winner of 3 U.S. and 3 Wimbledon championships by the time she had reached 19. Then she suffered an accident. While riding a horse, she backed into a cement mixer, gashing one of her legs. It was the end of a brilliant career. How do you back in? Like, backing into a cement mixer seems like something you can do in a car, and I really don't quite understand how you do that into a on a horse. But apparently, that's what happened.
Yeah, how do you do that on a horse?
Like, do the horses make a beep 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 sound like to warn? I was bitter at first, Maureen said. I hadn't reached my peak, and I had many more good years of tennis left. But this bitterness disappeared with time. Maureen later married Norman Brinker, Olympic equestrian ace, and turned her attention to homemaking. She is the mother of two small girls, age 6 and 4.5, and she and Brinker now live in Houston.
Well, they don't use the phrase homemaking anymore.
Yeah, that's true. No one is...
making home.
No one's making home. There are still stay-at-home moms, but they're not necessarily, you know, staying at home to make it.
No.
That's too bad. Homemaker seems like not only a, it's a, like a, it's a real job.
Neither
Francesca nor I make home, and so we just live in squalor.
In an unmade home.
Yeah, completely unmade home. Just like, it's mostly stuffed animals now because of the goddamn daughter. Yeah. But yeah, well, those are all interesting stories and all good to know for talking about this episode.
Also, LBJ turned 55. I don't know if that's helpful to you, but yeah.
Yeah, he's about to be president. He just don't know it yet.
He's a young and spry 55 as opposed to our 79-year-old current president.
Yes.
Our 79-year-old hot piece of ass.
Yeah,
president.
Yummy, yummy. I like all the bruises.
79, also my dad's age, Larry.
Oh,
how's
that
doing?
Matters to you guys.
Yeah, no, it does matter.
My dad's spry. He's pretty spry.
He's a spry guy.
Yeah.
I like it.
I love a spry dad.
I love a spry guy. And now, before we get into the episode, it is important that you hear a little bit of the Draper D story about this particular episode, which I will play for you right now, and you can hear the rest later.
I've just done blackface for coworkers for my workplace, and it's a hit. Jane sits in front of me while I sing about Kentucky. It's great. Roger Sterling is singing like the frog from the WB, and Don wants to get out of there as Roger singing racial slurs, big yikes. Yikes.
Anyway.
Lolling, yes, I am lolling. He's really going for it today.
All right, well, you know, you can really hear the whole song at the end of the episode, but I just wanted you guys to hear a little bit of it now.
It's a good song.
I've just done blackface is the name of that parody song. Yeah, let's talk about this episode. Listen, a lot more happens than just blackface. But let's get our general thoughts. Vince.
Yeah, I think
tell me what you think.
Might be my favorite episode of Mad Men. It's one
ever?
It's one that I really like. It's one that it sticks out in my mind. I feel like I judge by how much of it I remembered when I rewatch, and as I'm watching, I'm sort of realizing how much of this episode stuck in my brain. Not necessarily because of the blackface, but the whole episode to me sort of feels like purgatory. All of the characters seem like they know that there are ominous currents on the horizon, but they are determined to just keep having a good time while the sun's shining. I almost don't like the plot device of Sally reading the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, just because I'm not getting crumbling empire so much in this episode like I do from a lot of other Mad Men episodes. To me, this one, it does seem like purgatory. Like, everyone's waiting for something to happen. And usually, like, on shows that do that and get acclaimed for it, I'm not a fan of that sort of plot line. But this feels like the good version of the Seinfeld Chinese restaurant episode, or like a, you know, like one of those capsule episodes of television. I love it. There's so many good interactions in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. Amy, generally, what do you think?
I mean, similar to Vince, I hadn't watched Mad Men in years ago. I'd watched it, and I was surprised how much I remembered. I forgot that Joan had married this doctor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That came as a shock to me. And then we see the start of, what's his wife's name, the hot blonde?
Betty's relationship with the guy who works at the mayor's office.
Yes, yes. And I liked that interaction of him asking to feel her pregnant belly.
First time him saying,
it might be the martinis. I got to get my hands on this belly.
It's somehow really sweet and intensely creepy at the same time.
Yes, but I thought it was like, I'm pretentious for this, I know, but my biggest compliment to TV is always when it reminds me of literature.
Mm, yes, yes.
And this is also comes from someone who reads a ton of books. I have a PhD and watches exclusively reality TV. So I am an idiot, but when I finally take the time to watch good TV or rewatch it, I'm always like, oh, it feels like a short story. Like kind of elliptical, mm-hmm. everything that goes unsaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially this show in particular, because it's so much of an emphasis on character building that
it is like a literary show.
Yeah,
I remember thinking that when I first watched it, I thought it was going a different way. I thought I remembered with the daughter stealing the money that she was going to blame it on the maid.
Right. Yeah.
I thought we were going to see, and that was going to be
that was just your racist heart.
No, but I thought that was going to be a parallel to the blackface of like, not only are they racist, but they're also pegging things on.
Right, right. Well,
so I was relieved to find that she didn't peg it on the
maid. Yeah, I think there's an element of like when you do, I feel like historic, when we talk about historical like mores, we let people in history off the hook too easily.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes where it's like in this episode, like it'd be like, oh, everybody loved the blackface and thought it was hilarious would be like one way to do it. And because it's like, oh, people were so, you know, simple in 1963. But like the way this structured it, like you can tell like people are disapproving at the time. Like Dawn is sort of disapproving of the whole thing, like even in the moment. And I feel like that is sort of a, you know, a current of history that gets lost a lot of times.
Right.
Where it's like, oh yeah, slavery was the law of the land. And it's like, yeah, but there were people that said it was bad. Like,
right.
Yeah. I was glad that I had misremembered it and that she didn't blame the maid. Cause I think that would have been like a hat on a hat.
100%.
Just too much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My particular thoughts on this episode, this is like kind of outside of the, I don't know, of the actual story. I feel like this was a cast of Mad Men talent show, which was like surprisingly not self-indulgent and very fun to watch. Like, first of all, you've got Roger Sterling in blackface. You know, watching that is, you know, you're immediately like, ugh. But if you're listening to him sing, you forget, you're like, oh, he can sing. He's actually, he's a good singer, even though he's, you know, obviously the mode of singing is racist. And then also Joan playing the accordion and singing that song in French. Christina Hendricks actually could play. She was actually playing and playing very well and singing very well. And fucking Pete Campbell.
I mean, a belly laugh the whole time through that dance. Like, watching him and Trudy, like, do their little dance number was so amazing.
It was incredible to watch because you're watching, you know, this guy, you know, Pete, who's played by Vincent Krauthammer, or I don't know his last name. It's very...
I always forget it, too.
Yeah, it's like something... It's got Kraut in there, I'm pretty sure, which is a racial slur for German people, but also a real name. Like, you're watching him dance, and he is...
Kartheiser.
Kartheiser. All right. Well, I did the slur, but either way, it's revenge for what Germany did.
they know what they did.
They know what they did. And yeah, no, just like watching him dance, you also see early on, before they like clear the entire dance floor, you see Harry dancing with his wife kind of like right next to them while they're like putting on this choreographed show. Mm-hmm. And I was watching Harry going, fuck, that's me. Like, I don't have, you know, I have no smooth movements. Everything I do is jerky. It's just the way my body is built. I have no riz or natural smoothness. So, like, see.
Well, also, Pete has no riz. Pete is the most rizless, guileless human ever, but it only, his like, endearing qualities only come out on the dance floor.
Which is, it's crazy to watch because he's doing it so well. And then even, like, Paul Kinsey. Obviously,
Paul Kinsey.
He's the guy. Yeah, he's the guy who like brings over his Princeton buddy to.
Oh
smoke
yeah,
weed.
I liked watching Peggy get high. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, that was really fun. And but like watching Paul, you know, take up the challenge to sing on you know like on a whim, like prove that you were good enough for the Tiger Tones.
right.
And it's not like a good performance. Like, he's not a good singer, but it's fun watching all of the different
He got a pay pass with like a C+, and you're
not to change the subject from singing, but
oh,
I like the entrance of Connie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it reminded me, like, oh, this guy's going to be important, but then I couldn't remember why he was important.
Connie is, like, this character that was just, like, so perfectly cemented in my mind. Like, he stands out as, like, a random Mad Men cameo that I remembered forever for some reason.
Yeah.
And, like, a very satisfying reminder of this theme or motif that's, like, the undercurrent of the whole show, which is, like, where is Don Draper from? Like, where did he come from? And he asks him, like, where did you come from? And he says the thing. And this episode made me want to.
Where did you go?
Every wedding has 10 covers of Cotton Eye Joe. And, but this made me want to rewatch it and be like, oh, yeah, where does he come from again? I know he lies about it, but I've forgotten. Also made me want an old fashioned.
This show launched the bourbon boom in America. But,
and I love an old fashioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Similar to the way I think about this as like a purgatory episode that's actually good. Like the old sage character who speaks in an allegory is like a stock sort of like literary movie TV character. Mm-hmm. And usually it comes off very contrived and artificial. And this one, like, I was just sort of hanging on this guy's every word for whatever reason.
Yeah, for some reason, this episode did a bunch of things that I find, like you said, to be, like, contrived or, you know, like, in more simple terms, like not try-hardy, but almost just self-indulgent that a lot of shows do, especially in their later years when they start doing, we're going to do a musical episode of Scrubs or whatever. And it's like, I'm sure it's fun for the cast. And if you're like a big, big fan of the show to see, you know, people showcasing their talents. But for the most part, I find that shit kind of like boring and self-indulgent. In this, it felt like a talent show for the cast that I was number one impressed by how talented they were, and number two, it fit in with their characters completely.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a depiction of a time when like the white power structure like doing theater and being in the Tiger Tones
and learning
how to dance was like part of your education.
Right. You got to do like 10 years of like conservatory tap as an elementary school kid before you can go on to run a chemical company.
How
many seasons of Mad Men are there?
I think there's 7.
I for some reason I was thinking there were way more. So we're like almost halfway here.
Almost halfway there.
I mean, yeah, season 3.
Yeah. And so let's get into what happens in this episode. We get all of our opening, you know, storylines happening one by one. It starts out with there is an audition for, I think, the commercial with that they're going to do from the previous episode, where they're going to have like a Bye Bye Birdie parody, but to sell Diet Coke.
Patio.
That's the name of the
Pepsi.
Right. Pepsi. And Harry is being a little creeper, you know, asking the actress to do the twist. And then Kenny and Pete come in and tell creative, you guys got to work over the weekend to get this copy for Bacardi. They want more, you know, more ideas, more pitches. Meanwhile, Kenny and Pete and Harry are all going to be at Jane and Roger's derby party. That is going to happen. Meanwhile, Joan sees Jane at the office, and they're being catty.
Who is Jane again?
Jane.
She's the one wearing what looks like half a beach ball on her head for some reason. Like,
no, but who is Jane in the context of the show?
Oh, she was his secretary. She was actually Don Draper's.
She was Don's secretary.
Yeah, Don's secretary for a little bit, and she clearly...
That's why she knows about Don's... Marital troubles, because she was there for Don's separation. She was his secretary.
Okay, and then she marries the boss and she gets to quit. Yes.
And so now, you know, like, Jane goes from being yelled at by Joan, in fact being fired by Joan at one point in the previous
only
season,
to be like, I'm the boss's wife.
Right. Yeah, well, now I'm married to the boss, so you have to, you know, park my
and,
car
and has what's his name, blackface guy,
Roger
has he's left his wife of an appropriate age.
Yes. Okay. They are, that's I believe I they are now married, and this is, so they're married, and he's in a contentious divorce with his ex-wife, Mona. And this party, obviously, that they're throwing is not going to contain neither his daughter nor his ex-wife.
Mona.
Yeah. Mona. Then they're being catty with each other. Meanwhile, Peggy has a new secretary named Olive. She is significantly older, and she's kind of mom-coded.
Not just mom-coded, she's a buzzkill.
Yes.
Buzzkill-coded. Not a fun mom.
That's true. No. There are good moms.
They're fun moms.
There are fun moms out there who will let you smoke weed with your friends as long as you do it, you know, nearby.
In the house. Yeah.
Exactly. She is not that. In fact, she is very judgy, and Peggy doesn't like it. But we're going to start with Sally and Jean for, you know, get through their storyline, because I found their dynamic to be incredibly cute. There's something about, like, a really old guy and his granddaughter that I find, like, irresistibly adorable.
I think that he's just, that's Ryan
Reynolds.
Catrona.
Okay.
Is the actor who plays Gene, Betty's dad. And he is just, I don't know, he's just so great. Him and Connie both are, like, perfect old guy actors for those roles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're bonding by Jean is having Sally read a book called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, in which she is learning about how butt-fucking ruined Rome or something.
They got too soft. It's like the classic, you know,
yeah, it's
Teddy
a classic
Roosevelt read on history.
Yes, it is. I think, you know, this is like proto-Chud. You know, proto guy who has a Greek statue in Avatar as like as profile picture on Twitter. Like,
we stopped doing war and conquer, and we got soft and oriental and our soft Syrian genes. I forget exactly how they put it, but it's great.
Yeah, there's a few excerpts from the book that are just, like, so funny to watch her as a literal child read. Here's a
little bit. I'd love to see a little girl read something inappropriate.
Yes, it's very fun.
And the lively licentiousness.
Go ahead.
Of the Greeks was blended with the hereditary softness of the Therians.
Like, there's just the hereditary softness of the Syrians is, oh, it's a great line.
I'm always saying that about you.
Yeah, yeah, you're always saying this. It's that, you know, in the Levant, there's a lot of girlishness. But yeah, she's reading this book. She's learning. I like, you know, to be honest, I'll be real with you. I Googled licentiousness because I'm like, I think it means sort of like horny.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Profligate, promiscuous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it means all those things. Anyways, licentiousness, good word. I think it describes me and many other people that I know. So Sally is zipping up her mom as she and Dawn are about to go to this party. And then while she's like going to see Grandpa Gene, she steals $5 right from him.
And she correctly surmises that no one's going to believe this dementia-addled old man who thinks he's on KP duty and peels all the potatoes in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is kind of genius. Did you guys, were you guys ever going to, you know, mama or papa's purse and steal money?
Sure I did. I don't remember specific instances.
But Amy,
I'm sure I did.
Were you a thief as a child?
No, I was not a thief, but my grandpa would give me a quarter.
Oh,
sometimes
nice.
He'd give me, he had a few half dollars he'd give me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I love the half dollar.
Lucky half dollar. I had not remembered grandpa. This was like a nice, oh yeah, grandpa. And then I remembered the little girl, Sally, stealing the $5. Again, I thought that she was going to blame the maid, and I'm glad she didn't.
Yes.
Yeah. What is his problem with Don? Just that he's like a moneyed madman, you know, like when he says like, oh, you people think money can solve anything.
He's old money. So like, I think for him, his problem with Don is that like, he looks at Don as like a new money yuppie. That's kind of
yes,
my,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't think he has that much money anymore too. I think
no,
that's
but they have a name, which is like means yeah. more to these blue blooded
right.
guys.
Old
than,
school.
Yeah. So I, you know, with him, he's always, and he also doesn't trust Don because Don doesn't, you know, it's one thing to like come from like a not prominent family. It's another thing entirely to have no family to speak of.
Well, no, yes, and of course we know that Don has.
Yes, he's got a past.
Don's got a past.
He's got a secret past. So yeah, Gene immediately notices his $5 are gone. I think that Sally was low key expecting him to. It wasn't that like no one's gonna believe him. It was more that like he's not gonna miss
it. Right? Yeah.
But he does. He does notice the $5 and immediately starts blaming Carla, who is their housekeeper. And Dawn tries to give
someone's him... blaming Carla. We knew someone was gonna blame her.
Yes. And Carla,
I mean, he doesn't outright blame her, right?
No, he never actually says it, yeah. But it's like
he's a wasp. He doesn't have to do.
No, right. Yeah.
It's inferred. It. Yeah.
Yes. And it is funny how Carla knows immediately she's going to take the blame for this and like knows where this is going. And like, you know, Gene is watching Carla search for the money just and he's saying things like, come on, this is ridiculous. Like without saying you have it, just give it up. You're going to put on a whole show for me. And they have this great exchange right here.
Maybe it fell out of your pocket.
It didn't.
Well, I didn't take it.
I didn't say you did.
Not yet.
Will you stop it, Viola?
My name's not Viola. It's Carla.
You know Viola?
We don't all know each other, Mr. Hofstadt.
Like, him asking, do you know Viola?
Yeah. And had we met Viola
no.
in the show?
No,
okay.
No. She's just a black lady.
She's
knows.
Just a black lady.
Yeah.
Knows, right?
Yeah. It is, or, you know, wait, didn't... Last season, didn't Betty,
oh, did we meet? Maybe did we meet? I don't know
if that was Viola specifically, but we met.
He had a he had a new wife. He had a new girlfriend / wife.
No, but Betty like goes to her. You know what? Maybe that's later in the season. We're gonna see Viola later in the season. I did skip ahead and watch more episodes than just this one.
How dare you?
I'm sorry, everybody. So yeah, they're searching for the money. Gene and Carla are almost fighting because he's not eating his food and he's like pushing it away like a child. Like, you don't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. Where's my money? And then Sally.
Well, he knows he's in a spot where like no one believes him anymore because he's, you know, losing his marbles a little bit.
Right. Because so, he's had a series of strokes.
Yeah. He knows he has this marble. And so to be like for someone to, you know, say he doesn't know what he's talking about is very hard right for him.
And then Sally pretends to find the money in the most kind of like childish, like obvious way possible.
She's like, it's on the floor.
Yeah. Is this it? This crumpled up money?
Yeah.
You definitely crumpled it, guy who owns a money clip.
Yeah. Unlike Martin Luther King, she does have a lisp also.
Yeah. Yeah. She has an actual lisp. And there's a moment where Carla is like, she like senses the possibility of violence breaking out and she stops it from happening. She kind of defuses it by going like, well, that problem solved. And then at the end of the storyline, you think that, you know, Gene calls for Sally and you think, she, you know, uh-oh, he's going to give her what for. And then instead just hands her the book and says, you know, keep going. And they read more about the effeminate Orientals or whatever.
Yeah, licentious Orientalism and, right, and Syrian softness.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, that happens with that. Oh, my God. Is that producer Brent?
Hey, it's me. Hi, good to see everybody. I know I shouldn't do blackface, but it would have been pretty funny if I turned on my
I'm really glad you didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't too, but we agreed.
Why does Brent have such a funny shadow over him?
He's very sepia toned.
I think that is not shoe polish. That is him. That's his beard. That's what his beard looks like. What were you going to say, Brent?
I think we should do some ads.
Okay.
Oh, well, I love ads.
Well, we love advertisements. So everyone, please stick around. We will be right back.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all, and everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man here with Amy Silverberg. How you doing, Amy?
Dun, da, dun.
We're going to be talking about now the entire Bacardi storyline that happens. They're working the weekend. All of like the creative team is working the weekend. And we get a lot of Paul in this episode, which I love. Paul is one of the most annoying people on the show.
Now, remind me, which one is Paul?
Paul Kinsey is the one who is like, you know, he went to Princeton. He was fired from the Tiger Tones.
Right,
Is
Tubbier.
Yeah. He went to, he was a freedom rider against his will because he was trying to look cool by having a black girlfriend.
Yes, he is like your classic virtue signal. Like whenever a right winger talks about a liberal, he's that liberal where it's like everything he's doing is not because he believes in anything necessarily. It's because he wants people to be impressed with his morals.
He is a proto shitlib fuck boy, and I am like
a guy who's wearing a hat that says like the future is female and then screams at his girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff aside, like it does hurt me, like how much of myself I do see.
Oh, sure.
Paul, because I don't think I'm pretentious or like a virtue signaling shitlib, but the fact that he's sort of like the scholarship boy who went to all the right schools and thinks he's made his way in the meritocracy, but still finds himself like hitting the sort of glass ceiling not coming from money seems to always produce. And you're like, why? I did all the things. I passed all the tests. I went to the places. What's going on? Why does it seem like all these people who come from money have it so much easier than I do?
Yeah, I was going to say, you remind me a lot of him in those ways. kind of, you know.
You remind me of him because of your time spent with what's the acapella group called again?
The Tiger Tones. No, there's something about him.
In my case, we only did parody songs about golf.
But still very good. Yeah. It is funny kind of like watching him, you know, at the beginning of the episode, you see him getting mad. The fact that like Harry is going to go to this party that their boss is throwing at like the country club.
Diddy's white party.
Yeah. He's going to go to his white party where he's doing blackface and he doesn't get to go. And he's just like, you know, what the hell? You know, I did everything right. You see him like essentially feeling less than throughout this episode until he has like a whipping boy, someone he feels better than. And that's when it's Saturday. They're trying to come up with ideas for Bacardi and they decide, let's get some weed. So they call over a college friend from Princeton, Jeffrey, the Ivy League drug dealer. And he goes up to
classic them. Example of the drug dealer who hangs out and overstays his welcome.
Yeah.
And like womanizer, like won't stop trying to hit on Peggy, like the, you know, least sexual person in the room.
Yes. Like he's a total stranger, but he's got drugs. And usually those two things equal getting pussy, I guess. But he's
what
got-
is it about dealing drugs that that makes you confuse your customers for friends?
I think it's because you do find yourself being, you know, called a lot by people and you're sure, like, I must be really likable.
And your customers will smoke with you.
Yeah.
And pretend that they're your friend.
Yeah. Reluctantly, like a lot of the time reluctantly, in this case.
Yeah.
But it's like, you never call anymore. It's like, because I only call you when I want drugs. That's why you're a drug dealer, man.
Right. Because I don't want to call you and like, you know, not buy drugs. Sometimes
all the contemporary like parallels.
Oh yeah.
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 That is just like, we still have a guy like that. I guess now they have
They still have guys like that.
Cannabis shops, but they still have guys like that.
Right.
Matt, is there like, was there the heroin version of that guy?
Oh my God, are you kidding? They're so much worse for like, you know, for opiate guys. Because first of all, none of them are consistent because they're all, you know, like this guy.
On opiates.
What's that?
I said, are they all doing the opiates?
Yes, they're all also addicts. So it's like, it's one thing to be like, I get high on my own supply as a weed dealer because like everyone smokes weed. That's fine. But it's like, for the most part, buying opiates from people who aren't like, you know, where you're going to like an open air drug market on the street, you're buying from someone who just loves opiates like you do and isn't afraid of the possible consequences of getting, you know, of, you know, selling drugs. So it's this guy, but 1,000 times worse. Like I have picked up a guy like this in a car. And then because I was like, oh, he says, you know, we're going to go, you know, score. And then he's like, okay, and we had to drive like 45 minutes one time to like somewhere, like, I don't know, 45 minutes from Santa Cruz. And I'm just like, where the fuck are we going? And I just had to hear him talk about fucking music. It was the worst.
We had our drug dealer in college who was a friend of a friend. He was the kind of drug dealer that has a lot of exotic pets, which I think is another like drug dealer thing. They always have like a lot of exotic pets. And he got really high on hallucinogens one night, and he had a pet boa constrictor that he was convinced was the devil and chopped in half with a butcher knife.
Oh my God.
What?
And woke up on the floor of his kitchen with his boa constrictor cut in half, covered in snake blood.
Fuck.
And it's not like a worm that can kind of grow a tail.
No,
back.
It was a big snake. Like, oh,
that's a big dead snake. Lots of blood. That's awful. This is like, it's definitely an archetype. It's a type of person, the drug dealer, whoever stays there, welcome. And he is, I think he's really funny, like, you know, single serving character. I don't think he's in the show for the rest of it, but he sells them four joints, immediately lights up, and instead of passing, he tells them to relax, and he looks out the window and he goes like, you ever look out this window?
Just and like, suddenly he's like pitching on the ads.
Yes,
I like that.
Exactly.
And hitting on Peggy. Leading. So by the way, what's the new young little guy that's in this
Smitty
scene? Smitty.
Yeah.
What happened to Kurt? Because it used to be Smitty and Kurt were a team. Did Kurt get fired? What did Kurt just?
I don't know.
Leave?
You don't see Kurt. I have literally no clue what happened to him. So maybe was not invited to join the new, you know, venture. Because this is them peeling off, right, and doing their own thing after the British guys bought them, right? So maybe he got fired after that. I don't know, but that's Smitty, and Smitty is, you know, kind of making fun of Paul for, you know, being the pretentious dick he is. Peggy goes out for a second and sees Olive like is working for some reason over the weekend, and she's like, if you're here then I'm here. And then they smell weed. And Peggy goes in there, and there's this, like, I just really love the moment where, like, Paul would be the worst person to get high with, because as soon as there's a door knock, the way he says go away is just so childish. I have a clip.
I know what you're doing. How are you?
Oh, wait, no, I don't have that clip. Anyways.
What's the actress's name who plays Peggy again?
Elizabeth Olsen, right?
No, Elizabeth Moss.
Moss, that's right. Yeah.
Wait, was this like the beginning of her?
Oh,
is
yeah.
This like the first big thing she's in?
I think so.
Yeah. It's so like so fun to see her like come. I don't know. She's such a, her and Joan are such good female characters.
Yeah. Like, they're great. And she.
It was a thrill for me to see them again. Joan and her, you know, I love Big Jugs.
Oh, yeah.
BigJugsRule@gmail.com.
She got them Jeggy.
Big Naturals.
And it reminds me of Peggy's just like her journey to become a ad man, but an ad gal.
Yeah.
Sorry. I guess Elizabeth Moss was on The West Wing before she was on Mad Men. So, you know.
Oh, for was it a series regular? Are we talking about some guest appearances?
But this, of course, is pre. What's the one where she's in all red?
The Lady in the Water. Well, no, what is that called? The
Lady in the Water.
The Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. I have dementia. I can't recall a single thing.
We're all Grandpa Gene right now.
Yeah.
Where's my $5? But yeah, I love watching her. Yeah, I don't know. Kind of, she says what she wants. You know, she's just like, I'm a professional working woman and I have agency and I want to smoke weed. She says, my name is Peggy Olson, and I want to smoke marijuana.
And she's such a little goody two shoes. It's like, yeah, light up, Peggy. Let's go.
Yeah. And meanwhile, everyone's smoking weed. Everyone's getting high. And then Paul.
So what's the worst that could happen if you smoke weed? Have a child out of wedlock? Already got that one covered.
Too late. Paul and Jeffrey, the Ivy League drug dealer, have a big fight because Paul is like a dickhead. And I love the moment where, this is what Jeffrey says. Hold on.
You do have a job, Jeffrey. You're a drug pusher.
What is that, an English accent?
I love that because, yes, what is he doing there? His accent is just so affected. It's just so clearly he's putting it on. And then they get into a little sing-off in which he has to prove that he was in the Tiger Tones and that he left only because he had mono and not that he was fired.
Do you have the Give It a Rest clip?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Wait, which is the Give It a Rest clip?
Where the drug dealer keeps hitting on Peggy. Oh.
Peggy, and he goes, Give It a Rest.
No, I don't. I do not have that clip.
This is the second episode in a row it was the first episode of the season where someone's like flirting overtly and another character's like, all right, man, settle down.
Give It a Rest.
Yeah. People coming on strong. But yeah, he sings, Hello, My Baby, Hello, My Honey.
Is that the one? That's it.
It's the same one that the frog sings, you know, that WB frog.
Of course.
Then they have this really cute moment where they sing together. And then Paul is freaking out. Meanwhile, Peggy figures out the whole thing. He's like, what if it's Bacardi? You know, it's your...
She's like, on the beach. Yeah. I like how in shows that's how anybody thinks of something.
Yeah.
You know, like I've never had like a eureka moment ever in my life. I never was like, on the beach.
Yeah. The worst is I just rewatched... Red Dragon, because I was on a plane and I was like, I love that movie. And at one point, Edward Norton's character just goes, talcum powder. And I was like, you just thought of the word, the letter T, and you got it from that? Fucking stupid.
I like
on the beach,
this.
On the beach.
This episode is sort of like the origin story for the Corona Find Your Beach.
That's exactly what happens. It's like, what if there was a hammock, but on the roof or something? And then Olive berates and judges Peggy for smoking drugs. And Peggy tells her off and then feels sympathy.
Peggy's like, wait, you're scared.
Yeah, you're scared. You're scared for me. Don't worry. I'm going to be able to do everything that you want for me. Which is kind of an insanely narcissistic thing to think.
Yeah, it's like this bitch is just afraid for her job, right?
Right. She's just like, you're going to fuck this up for both of us.
Yeah.
You know, like she's coming into work and on a weekend. Not because she loves you. She's doing it because she needs the fucking money, bro. Like, the idea that, like, Olive is there to be a surrogate mother for her, and she's going to treat her like that by saying, stop judging me. It's like, no, Peggy, maybe not everything's about you. And the garden party. This is just a really, I mean, this is the majority of this episode's, like, banger scenes happen at this derby party. Dixieland swing, like Dixieland jazz, is some of the most fun music to listen to. It's like the only time when jazz was danceable, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you ever listen, you ever put on a jazz station and be like, well, what am I supposed to do?
Right. I actually put on jazz to like right
exactly
something where you can't have like lyrics in the background,
right? Free form. Yeah, but the idea of like
I'm an old man.
Well, I mean, I understand listening to it as like background music for other creative thinking, but the idea
but you're not gonna like shimmy to it.
Yeah, I mean, I went to New York and it was like in Manhattan and there was like a jazz club and I'd be like, ooh, what
the
if I went
note?
To it might have been, it was like touristy as shit. And I was like, what if I went to a jazz club? And I just like sat there and I was just like, what do I do?
Yeah. You appreciate like their ability to know the right scale to solo in.
Yeah. It's a lot of the like watching like inside jazz jokes where, you know, someone does a solo and everyone laughs for some reason.
Yeah.
You go, okay. I don't know why it was funny. That's probably like a music joke that I didn't know. But yeah, no, they're dancing to Dixieland jazz and it's a lot of fun. And then, the most magical scene happens, which of course I have to play a little bit of, because you got to hear John Slattery singing Old Kentucky Home.
The sun shines bright on the old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer and the darkies are gay.
Fucking A.
The corn tops ripe and the meadows in the bloom, while the birds make music all the day.
It's like legitimately he's a great singer.
Yeah, you want to listen to him.
Yeah, and I've, you know, it's unfortunate because even in just audio form, you can hear the blackface.
You absolutely
Does he say the darties are gay?
Darkies.
Oh, you said darkies. Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah. It. No, it's even worse.
Yeah, I was like, what's a darty?
Yeah, and, you know, it's just one of those iconic
darty
scenes.
It's one of those guys that are always chucking darts.
Yeah, oh, they're always darting around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the scene is great for, you know, if you rewatch the scene, it's really fun to just look through the background of whenever they do a shot of people watching and just try to find, there's a few extras in there who just look horrified. And I'm sure that was a direction from, you know, from Matthew Weiner or whoever, but like, there, it's just really fun to pick them out and be like, oh yeah, that person is truly having a moment.
Yeah. Well, Don kind of skulks around the background like, ugh, I need to get a drink.
Yeah. And he goes to a unintended bar.
And when his wife says, like, oh, he's upset because he likes to dance, she's being ironic, right?
I think she is just making excuses for the fact that he just
like did, he loves to dance.
I think he just didn't want to be there, right? Like, yes, he yeah. was he does not approve of Roger.
Roger is showing weakness by marrying this young broad, and Don does not like to see
and leaving his
age
appropriate wife.
Yes. He's like, listen, you can cheat all you want, but as soon as you, you know,
consummate that,
right?
Be a man and compartmentalize.
Exactly.
Like, the gist of Don's.
Be a man and cheat on your age appropriate wife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Force the feelings down, way, way down. Just stuff them in there.
Yes. Yeah. He does not approve. His whole life is about, you know, projecting a type of person. And he doesn't like anyone being, I don't know, like giving in to feelings because he finds them to be dangerous or something. I don't know. He goes to have a drink, and then there's a great scene with Connie and Don where they both exchange stories. We never learn who Connie is at this moment. This is just, as far as we know, some guy who is also at the same party.
And who does he eventually become?
He is the CEO.
Connie Hilton.
Yes, Hilton. Yes. So, he owns Hilton Hotels, and this is going to work out for Don, you know, unbeknownst to him. It's funny.
Real guy, by the way.
Connie Hilton?
Interesting.
Yeah, Conrad Hilton is a
That is who started Hilton.
Oh, I thought it was Paris.
I was just going to say, great-great-grandfather of Paris?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out. I know he's related to Paris, but I'm trying
to figure out. He's got to be. Yeah, he's probably grandfather, I assume, right?
I was just looking for that. Her parents are Richard Hilton. Yeah, Conrad Hilton is her great-grandfather.
Damn, that's crazy. So we don't know that. He's just some guy, and they're both connecting in this moment. Oh, I was going to say that, like, Don is standing with Pete at one point at the beginning of this party, and Pete is like, oh, that's a person who runs, you know, fucking DuPont. And
Pete sidles up to him, and the look on Don's face just of disgust that Pete is empowered to sidle up to him at a party is
right.
Like, it says so much more than any dialogue could. It's so wonderful.
But he does tell him, he's like, don't hand out your business card.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's probably right to say that, because that would be uncouth. And instead he has this, you know, kind of like serendipitous chance meeting with Conrad Hilton. And they talk about this kind of stuff.
When I was a boy, there was a mansion on the river I used to paddle by in my John boat. Twinkling lights, violins, girls giggling about something. It's different inside.
Where I grew up, there was a roadhouse. I parked cars. Fancy people would go there. But they wouldn't let me use the toilet. So, when nature called, I'd open up a trunk and relieve myself.
You didn't.
I was 15. There's probably some kid out there doing it to us right now.
That would be fucking crazy. If you, like, opened up the trunk of your car and there was a dookie in it.
I think he was just talking about pissing in there. But
yeah, sure. Easier to pee, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I figure you open the trunk and you take a dookie in it.
Oh, I would see. So. He takes out his ween. He does a pee.
I think he's just pissing.
Well, yeah. If you're going to do it, do it. Go pee-pee poo-poo.
Sure. That actor, by the way, is Chelsea Ross. He was... You might remember him from Major League, Basic Instinct.
He's very familiar.
He's just—he's like the Southern granddad, in like so many movies, and he's always, he always makes me happy and seems to improve whatever he's in.
He's great in this, and they have this really genuine connection, and you know, you don't know what it's about. You just think, oh, this is us getting a little bit of backstory on Dawn. And then of course later we'll find out he is Conrad Hilton. Meanwhile, Pete and Trudy are cutting a rug. They're incredible. Jane gets super drunk is dropping her food all over the place. Betty is waiting for Trudy in the bathroom, and for the first time we meet her future husband. Well, you know what? Spoiler alert. It's a 20-year-old show, but if you haven't seen it, you'll find out.
First, they have an affair, right? And then.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They have some sort of emotional affair for sure. Mm. But it is kind of crazy that, like, this is the first time they have ever met. And the first thing he does is, like, can I rub your belly? As if he's just like, I'm going to raise this one. Like, he knows he's going to get.
Well, first he goes, Betty. How does it feel?
Yeah. Which you think is going to be a pickup line. Like, you know, when.
And she's like, I guess I forget about it.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like, how did it feel when you hit Earth? Because you're an angel.
What? And he's like, no, how does it feel to have something inside of you growing? Yeah.
How does it feel
to
have
a baby? I like this moment of, like, her. Like, no one ever asked, you know, it seemed indicative to me that Dawn never asks her how anything feels,
right,
or how she's doing ever.
Yeah, like, how is your body or anything?
Right.
Or, you know, or
what
is
your
it?
Thoughts? Yeah, I'm
what are your thoughts?
In them.
What is it like to be you?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Women like to, it turns out, women like to be asked what their thoughts are.
So needy. Why can't you just write a strongly worded letter every month? That's a progress report. That's what I say. Jane gets super drunk and accidentally spills the beans that, you know, she and Dawn had talked about his marital troubles. And
I had forgotten at that moment that they had broken up for a while.
Yeah, there was some trouble at home. She had, like, essentially, you know, suspected that he was cheating, and he eventually kind of confirms it by apologizing. And they are back together. She's pregnant now, and now she's pissed off that Jane and he had talked about marital troubles. And of course, everyone suspects, you know, the worst of Jane, because she did get that job in order to, you know, marry a big, you know, yeah, a rich
sure,
guy.
People aren't normally empathetic towards the home wrecker.
Yeah, exactly. And so people, you know, I'm sure Betty is no different when it comes to that. They're like tussling a little bit, and then Roger sees them because she's like going, why don't you like me? And, you know, Dawn is like, you're drunk. And because, you know, he's trying to, like, get her in the chair, Roger sees this and thinks something's going on. I don't really understand that fully. He's just like, what's going on here? It's like, you didn't catch him kissing. Like, they're literally.
I didn't think that he thought something was going on. I think it just, he looked over and he was like reminded
She was clawing at his belt. It looked like she was clawing at his crotch. So it looked very weird.
Yeah, I guess. But it just, yeah, it seemed, I don't know. It was like the one clunk.
But then it was like clear that she was hammered. He's like, get her a glass of milk. That's what everyone needs when they're drunk.
Yeah. I think that was a great line because he's just like, can someone get this baby something that's not alcohol? She clearly can't handle it.
Yeah.
And
it feels like this episode, like in a lesser show, I feel like this would be setting up some sort of addiction on Jane's part.
Mm.
Like we don't find out that she's like a Dexedrine addict or anything like that, do we?
No.
I think she's just like drinking because she's not used to being the woman of the house.
Right, but she talks like she dunks on Joan early in the show by talking about how much like weight she's losing and she has to get her ring resized. Like it feels like the kind of foreshadowing you do when you're trying to like lead up to a like drug plot or some sort of health mm-hmm. issue.
Do they stay together? Sorry if I'm giving spoilers, but does
I actually
Sterling and the young secretary mm-hmm. or does he go back to Mira?
Yeah, I don't remember. Oh, my daughter's here. Hi, thank you for the silica gel, baby. Do you want to say hi?
Hello!
Oh my god, the hat. I love the hat.
We're both in hats.
Yeah. No, I'll be out in a second. Oh lord, I'm sorry, guys.
That's okay. She okay. loves her dad.
Yeah.
No, she does love me. That's true. Okay, well, let's finish this up. What were you saying? Dexedrine addict?
Yeah, like it feels like they're setting up a plot where she's, you know, going to have an addiction or you know, a health problem. It's sort of like in a movie when you see someone cough blood into a handkerchief, you're like, okay, well, this person clearly...
The old Chekhov thing, if you see a gun, it's got a fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chekhov's
weight
loss.
If you see a cough, it's got to be blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a popsicle, baby.
I want a popsicle.
I know. No, I want a fucking popsicle. So I don't know if they're setting up any kind of. I don't remember, but I don't think so. I think.
I don't think either.
Yeah, I thought it was her just feeling uncomfortable and getting hammered.
Yeah,
And particularly getting hammered at a place where she's supposed to be like well behaved.
Yeah, that was my read too, and that's part of what I like about this episode is it feels like they're introducing a lot of like it feels like they're introducing these potential storylines. It feels like a lot of open-ended storylines, which I usually don't like, but in mm-hmm. this episode I feel like it works really well because, you know, it's this atmosphere of purgatory where everybody they're noticing like things like they have feelings of discontent and they have an inkling that things are going bad, but they're determined to just have a good time in the moment.
Right. Yeah. And
well, and I don't even know like determined to have a good time because
sure.
a lot of them seem kind of there against their will, but they're like yeah. forced yes. to pretend to have a good time.
Yeah. Yes. Everybody dance now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Play the accordion. Yeah.
Everybody watch this freak sing in blackface.
Right. Exactly. Laugh. It's funny. But yeah, they get into this like fight, which I really love, between, you know, Roger and Dawn, where Roger's doing like the teenage, like, you're just jealous. It's just really, really funny. And here is that scene.
I don't know what I did to get under your skin.
Roger's late. No, my mother was right. It's a mistake to be conspicuously happy. Some people don't like it.
No one thinks you're happy. They think you're foolish.
I just love just like, oh, don't get it twisted. No one here thinks you're happy. We all think that this is going exactly where we thought it was going to go, which is you're going to be filled with insecurity about doing this to your life, and then eventually this is all going to end horribly. So
did you guys feel, sorry to skip ahead.
No, please.
The moment where he's watching them dance so closely as everyone's gone, that's like now he's rethinking that maybe Sterling is actually happy.
I wasn't sure if he's rethinking as to whether or not Sterling is happy. I think in that moment he is just feeling generally bad for him. That was my guess, was that like there they are dancing alone, you know, at their party. To celebrate their love, and he's just like, I don't know, kind of, to me, he I saw him as like shaking his head, like, you know, he's a fool in love type of thing.
I see that. But I read it as like, oh, he's so in love. He's so happy with her that the whole rest of the world could be falling apart and he wouldn't notice.
Yeah, yeah, no, maybe so. And he has to go back over and like, you know, make up with his
wife he doesn't like. Yeah, with his pregnant wife.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, now I got to get myself out of the doghouse again.
Yeah, with this woman who hates me.
Yeah, it's just two people who hate each other and about to have a third kid together. And yeah, that's what happens with that. Joan's storyline is very simple. She throws a dinner party. Her husband is trying to be a surgeon.
She finds out that he might be bad at being a doctor, which right. she's never considered before this moment.
Right. And then she plays the accordion and everyone's like, dang, big jugs and she can play accordion? What can't she do?
Have we seen her do that earlier in the episode? I mean, earlier in the show?
No, I think this is the first time the accordion has made an appearance as far as I remember.
I thought squeeze box was just a euphemism up yeah. until this moment.
Yeah, look at how many squeezing boxes we got in one screen. But yeah, she is singing in French and playing her accordion. She's done a great service for her husband, and we will see whether or not it pays off later. Okay, that's the episode. Favorite scene, at least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about, Vince?
I love Pete and Trudy in this episode. We talked about the dancing, but there is a Trudy line where she's like talking about Pete not wanting to come, and she's like, in this crowd, he was worried that one of my old beaux might appear. And just like the like the effortless mid-Atlantic WASP way of speaking that they do, like, just gets me every single time.
And yeah, I like that. Amy, a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we failed to mention?
I don't know. I like when the woman comes out of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I stop there to see.
Because my imagination runs wild. Is she peeing? Is she pooing?
we love
hot them. Wife. Yeah. No, and she just goes like, "I'm." It's when
Betty.
What? Yeah, Betty. God, I can't remember anything. When Betty has this interaction with the man who puts his hand on her pregnant belly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm waiting for a friend. And she says it in kind of a strange way,
yeah.
where every like line of dialogue feels like it also means something else.
Right.
You know, weighted extra, like the loneliness of this woman is what I kept thinking.
Yeah.
And then the friend she's waiting for comes out and she goes, sorry, I'm positively melting or something like that. Yeah. I was just like, yeah.
The friend she's waiting for is Trudy, who's someone who is absolutely not her friend.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's what I don't know. This show always makes me think of my grandma. I watched with my grandma. My grandma just passed away. May she rest in peace.
Oh, R.I.P.
She made it to 93. Loved her. It was her time to go. But, you know, it always just makes me think of, sorry to talk about being a woman.
Oh, God.
But like you just had so few choices as a woman, like at that time. It was like wife, mother. And then, of course, we see like, what's her name and what's her name? Big boobs and
Joan and Peggy.
Nerdy ad girl.
Yeah.
Kind of finding ways to subvert these roots that trapped women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always, I don't know, I was reminded of that this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you had to give this episode a letter grade, and we do, it's the law, I think I would give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Tough one. Like I said, maybe my favorite Mad Men episode of all time, one of the greatest shows of all time. So probably, you know, solid B+.
Oh my God. And Amy, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I mean, up to this point, I've been watching exclusively Love is Blind, Love Island.
Yes.
Also a weird show on TLC called Polly Family, about a family who is Polly.
Oh, sure.
So I gotta give this an A-, because I haven't watched a good TV show
That's fair.
Really, in a really long time.
Absolutely fair. A-, B+, B+. We do a little bit of averages. that's a B plus episode of Mad Men and an A plus 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 episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Amy Silverberg, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with
thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you?
People can find me at Amy Silverberg on Instagram. You can buy my novel at every bookstore that exists and at airports, weirdly.
Whoa, airports. You got that Hudson Books, man?
Exactly. Hudson Booksellers fucks with me.
Yo, that's fucking sick.
Damn.
Go to your nearest airport.
Yeah, you must buy the book at the airport. Yeah. I don't care if you're traveling.
Yeah, just go in and buy it or get it wherever books are sold. Amy Silverberg, wonderful having you on.
Thank you.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/Rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shooka shooka shout out. You get a name, a prep school name, and Vince will do the honors. We have four, count them, four names this week. Vince, are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay, first and foremost, we have a returning homie, Darren Blumgren.
Darren Blumgren, what is this guy, a flower? Mm. We call him Rosie the Riveter, because he's blooming like a rose and riveting like a butterfly.
Yeah, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. My name's Darren Blumgren. I gotta go pee.
I like that. That's great.
Thank you.
You could have went with my name's Darren Blumgren, not Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You went with my name's Darren Blumgren, and I gotta go pee.
I gotta go pee. Reed Forden is the name. Is the
Reed
next.
Ford and Reed. This guy's always
reading books.
Growing in stagnant ponds. We call him Swamp Thing.
Oh, Swamp Thing. If there's two of these reeds, you got a bassoon. It's a double reed instrument.
Swamp Thing, where is this guy? Matt's mom's panties?
All right.
When a biker gang rolls by.
All right.
Oh, she's so wet.
Yes. What? Saying my mom gets wet for biker gangs?
Yeah, yep, yep.
That's fair.
She loves hairy guys on Harleys.
Who doesn't? Two more names. Lydia Cowpey.
Lydia? Why kind of name would we give a lady named Lydia?
Lydia.
We call her Pizza Pie.
Why?
I don't know. There's like an Italian TV chef named Lydia something.
All right, well, there we go. We're calling Lydia. You are Pizza Pie Coopy. Lydia, close that Lydia and get your chips from NVIDIA. Last one, it's Jono Nightingale.
Hey, we call this guy Hunger Games because he's not a nightingale. He's a mockingjay.
Oh, okay. I like it. I really like Jono and his best friend, the Jedge, from the band Jew 2.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah.
Yep. You see what I did? Because, like, Bono.
There's Bono, the Edge, and isn't the bassist name just, like, Steve or something?
Adam and Larry.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Bono, the Edge, Larry. And those are your shout outs for this week. If you would like a shout out, $8 tier or more gets you that. Go to patreon.com/frogcast and join. And if you haven't heard your name yet and you did $8 tier a while ago, let us know. frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
I've just done blackface for coworkers for my workplace, and it's a hit. Jane sits in front of me while I sing about Kentucky. It's great. Roger Sterling is singing like the frog from the WB, and Don wants to get out of there as Roger singing racial slurs, big yikes. Yikes. Lolling, yes I am lolling, he's really going for it today. This whole episode is just a Mad Men talent show, and I'm impressed cause Slattery can sing and Hendrix plays accordion for real. And she sings in French, that's sick. Dancing, Pete's really dancing, it is entrancing, white boy is smooth.
Yo, what up, bitch? My name is L.A. Mad Flap, flippity flap, flap in the ass with that cat sucking on dick, putting a dick inside of a dick and double dick time. And what if I did something new with these parts? I don't know.
Polly sings like that froggy. It's a bit shoddy, but it's pretty good too. Roger does blackface, it's charming, but it's super racist, hard to watch, so I am still giggling. I'm doing it ironically, you guys. Yikes. Lolling, yes, I am lolling. He's really going for it, you guys. Lolling, yes, I am lolling. He's really going for it today. LOL, lolling, yes, I am.
Sucking on dicks.
That's Vince. Hi. And that's Amy.
Hi.
She's never seen this before.
I peed.
That's great.
Yeah, she had an accident.
Oh. Oh. That's okay. Accidents happen.
What if she was like, I love Mad Men?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.